Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the radio program, Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Thanks for listening. Hope you had a wonderful Christmas celebration. Looking forward to an exciting new year, 2017, if you can believe it. It's almost here, just a few days away. Walker Wildman in with us. Walker's keeping our Facebook going there. Didn't you, Walker?
Facebook page? Facebook Live on Today's Issues Facebook page. I just posted the U.S. Consumer Confidence article about how it's climbed to a 15-year high.
So if we talk about it, most issues, you're going to be able to go to our Facebook page and get the source that we're using to base our comments off of, right? So
right.
You got that. What did you just post? What does it say?
The headline is U.S. Consumer Confidence Climbed to 15-year High in December.
That's amazing. Think about that. Fred Jackson from OneNewsNow.com and American Family News with Steve Jordahl.
Good morning.
Abe left to go get ready for his two-hour show.
Adventures in Audit.
Focal point this afternoon. Abe will be on 1 to 3 Central Time. So he went to get prepared for that. Before I get to OneNewsNow.com, Steve, I want you to promote that. But,
yeah.
Fred, I want to ask you this. Economic news that Walker's citing, this is the highest in 15 years. Help me get this right. So people are surveying the general American voter out there, the public, and they're saying, how do you feel about the economy? And what they found is it's the highest percentage of optimistic people out there that we've Americans that we've about the economy in 15 years.
Yeah, the index measures consumers' assessment of current conditions. Now there are a lot of different things. If our economics reporter Chris Woodward were here, he would tell you that there are a lot of different parts that go into this. They look at spending rates. Now people may say, well, it's Christmas time, people always spend more. But no, this is a 15-year high. So people are expressing more optimism, looking into
that
the future.
That reflects good on President-elect Trump's economic message.
Well, what I don't think you can, as our own Dan Celia says, you can't disconnect it from Donald Trump's election in November. The fact that this has occurred within 3 weeks after that election, that people are feeling more optimistic. And is any wonder? What one of the things that Trump is going to do is lower the corporate tax from 31% to 15%. We now have the highest corporate tax in the world. You were referencing just before the newscast. There's a lot of American business keeping their money offshore because they don't want to lose half of it if they bring it onshore and expand their business in this country. Mm-hmm. So all of this is going into the fact that there's a new day coming. Many Americans believe that things are going to be much more positive for business, that there's going to be new businesses, and businesses are going to expand. I believe what happened in Indiana with Trump going up there and saying, no, they're not going to move this business down to Carrier, is not going to move the business down to Mexico. I mean, that was a signal way beyond the workers affected by Carrier. It was a signal, though, we're going to keep our jobs at home, which was a major thrust of his election campaign. And he proved it. And again, this is all happening before he's becomes officially the president of the United States.
So for a lot of American businessmen, they're singing "Mr. Bluebird's on My Shoulder."
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Right now. I mean, they're looking forward to some relief from the regulations of the Obama years, and they're looking forward to being able to bring new business, keep businesses in the U.S.
Well, exactly, and businesses love to hear this.
Right.
If consumers are optimistic, guess what? When you're optimistic as a consumer, well, I'm going to go out and buy that
right.
new fridge.
Right.
Instead of holding on to the old one.
Yeah, and I do hope, and I think all patriotic Americans hope that we can keep more of our businesses here in the U.S.
You
know, there's nothing wrong with trading with people around the world. That's good because it builds relations with other countries, and it brings a lot of countries into the 21st century and makes them see what freedom and opportunity look like when they deal with the U.S. But that's sort of a side benefit from the business dealings, is to show how freedom and human rights and those kinds of things are important to us as our values here in America. We can help spread those by doing commerce and trade around the world. But at the same time, we don't want to see all our jobs. We don't want to only be a consumer-driven economy. We want to make some stuff. That's what America was built on in the early part of the 20th century, all the way up to the probably 70s or 80s, when we began to lose all our jobs to other countries, because a lot of people would say, well, you know, the regulations were such that American companies couldn't make a profit any longer off their products, so they went to, you know, that's a tough thing to compete with, to be honest with you. When you move to other countries who don't have the kind of standards that we have for laborers, it makes it hard. It makes it easier for them to take our jobs.
Mm-hmm.
We all know this. You go to a country, for example, that doesn't have a minimum wage, or doesn't have OSHA, or doesn't have, you know, workers' compensation. Just all kinds of different. Doesn't have environmental standards. You know, they don't care whether they dump, poison in the river. But in the U.S., you do that, you're fined or you're put out of business. So. There are a lot of regulations that are reasonable, people understand, but then there are so many things that are just so burdensome that keep our companies from making money. Mm-hmm. All right, so now President-elect Trump and the Republicans are saying, you know what, we're going to unleash, do those shackles, mm-hmm. so that the American economy and the American businessman can begin to prosper again. And they're hoping that the economy then takes off. And if the economy takes off, then I think all the naysayers about Trump are going to have a hard time with the success. That's what happened with Reagan. You remember that all the naysayers about Reagan, and then the economy just took off. And, of course, he won in a landslide. I think he won 48, 49 states did Reagan his second term against, was it Mondale?
Yes.
Or Dukakis.
Well,
Dukakis, I think it was.
Reagan.
He beat Dukakis. He beat Mondale the first time, and then he beat Dukakis the second time. But both of them were mm-hmm. were blowouts,
yep.
I'm saying. Tell us what's at onenewsnow.com, Steve, right now.
As a matter of fact, Tim, at the top of the page, onenewsnow.com, we have an article about consumer outlook and how much of it is attributable to Donald Trump. And our poll question today, we're going to ask you to weigh in on...
Me or just everybody?
I'm speaking...
listener.
I'm speaking to a large crowd right now. I'm hoping that...
People in radio land listening right now.
All you out there, we'd like to hear what you think about the economy and whether your outlook is positive and if you attribute it to Trump. So go to onenewsnow.com and you can hear, weigh in on that and read about the economy. Also, another important issue at the beginning, at the top of the page, we're talking about the UN resolution. And as I speak right now, I'm watching John Kerry in Washington delivering a major speech on the justifying...
He's the outgoing Secretary of State.
The outgoing Secretary of State, John Kerry, is delivering a speech justifying the United States' action in the UN vote for this that allowed a condemnation of excuse me.
You know who should be up there giving this speech? President Barack Obama should man up. Mm. He should be out there giving this speech, not John Kerry. As high as the Secretary of State's office is, this is a presidential... decision.
Well, he'd have some things to answer for. I did happen to, I listened in on the first part of this speech, and I came here before he got to the part where he was going to explain the vote, but he was talking about the administration's view of Palestine and Israel and everything, and I brought some snippets if you'd like to hear them. This is a little bit of what the secretary had to say.
Well, I can probably take one. I'll see if I can take one with that. Okay. All right. Let me gather myself here. I'm about to hear from Secretary. We're going to lose all our listeners.
Do you need to go to your safe space?
I do. I need a puppy and a glass of warm milk here. What are we about to hear,
this
Steve?
This is significant. The first thing he's talking about is kind of setting up his view of the trends on the ground there. He's talking about the conflict between the Palestinians and the Israelis. And, Brent, if you could play quote, pick one.
The truth is that trends on the ground, violence, terrorism, incitement, settlement expansion, and the seemingly endless occupation, they are combining to destroy hopes for peace on both sides and increasingly cementing an irreversible one-state reality that most people do not actually want.
What he's pointing out here is that actions on the ground, he says, are going against what the talk is from both sides, which is everybody wants a two-state solution. Tim, I don't know what you think about a two-state solution or a one-state solution, but this is the source right now of the conflict between President Barack Obama and the rest of the world, basically, and he's pushing for this. So,
you know, one of the things, honestly, gentlemen, I found really disturbing just in that one clip. He is equating Hamas terrorist activities
with settlements,
killing innocent men, women, and children. He is equating that to Israel building a house.
Yes.
Right.
That's what he just did.
What insanity.
I thought the very same thing you're just mentioning right there, Fred. But anyway.
He did make it clear that he does not think that terrorism is justified. Brent, you could play clip two.
They have a choice.
I'm sorry, no. Stop that. I want to do that later. Clip three.
I don't know how much more I can take of this.
No,
let me say it again. There is absolutely no justification for terrorism.
Yes, there is.
And there never will be. And the most recent wave of Palestinian violence has included hundreds of terrorist attacks in the past year, including stabbings, shootings, vehicular attacks, and bombings. Many by individuals who have been radicalized by social media.
So,
radicalized by social media.
It's Facebook's
fault. Not radicalized by Islamic teaching. Right. Radicalized by social
Blame
media.
Blame everything but the actual source of radicalization.
I can't take any more. I'm sorry, Steve. I'm not going to listen anymore.
Can I play just one more for you? Because I think it's very instructive to what...
Look, we have a safe room and milk waiting on you after the show.
Okay. Play clip two. Play clip two,
Brent.
Go
ahead, one more.
This was very interesting.
They have a choice. They can choose to live together in one state or they can separate into two states. But here is a fundamental reality. If the choice is one state, Israel can either be Jewish or democratic. It cannot be both.
I mean, that defies what is going on right now. There are a million Palestinians living inside Israel. They are Israeli citizens.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, this man, I'm sorry, he's either extremely naive or he's willfully lying to the people.
Right.
There are a million Palestinians living as Israeli citizens in that democracy.
Right.
So what he just stated is a bold-faced lie. It is an untruth.
I just think that there are so many problems in the world. With so many countries that are so much, whatever you think of the Israeli-Palestinian situation in Israel, there's so many more problems in the world that are so clear morally as to right and wrong, and we don't speak on them. You know, we don't take on China. We embrace Cuba, who persecutes people.
Right, Iran.
Yeah, we signed deals with Iran.
We signed deals with Iran, and we're worried about Israel building some settlements, and we're going to take time
they're
out.
They're building neighborhoods.
Yeah, I know.
It's not like they just sent in their military.
Well,
to the
they're building neighborhoods. Here's the argument, and I think we need to move on from this. Just to tell you what the other side would say to this, they're saying that this land that Israel is building settlements on and have been is land that will be part of Palestine when there's a two-state solution. And they're saying that Israel is not interested in a two-state solution. The way we can prove that is because they're building houses in land that's supposed to be ours. This is from a Palestinian point of view. Should we, when we get to the point of having a two-state solution. A two-state solution to me is unless you could provide assurance that you would have safety for Israel, I don't see the point of a two-state solution because, you know, you can't put Hamas in charge of a government that's they're sworn to wipe Israel off the state of the map and then give them protection behind a wall that they can fire on Israel from. It's just so anyway, this is we as Christians need to pray for the peace of Jerusalem, and we need to pray for our new administration that he has the wisdom to deal with the situation there in Israel. This is not to deny by any means that Palestinian people are, you know, they have feelings too. They're real human beings. But a lot of them, as you said, Fred, have a lot better off in Israel than they would if they lived in another Arab country, for example. And I know the Jordanians, they don't want the Palestinians. They remember that? Jordanians, fellow Arabs, they didn't want the Palestinians.
Several countries denied entry to Palestinians to keep them.
The countries around Israel who are themselves Arabs, they didn't want the Palestinians, their Arab brethren, moving in on their territory and housing them. Then Jordan did take in some, you know, they call them refugees. And they are they were refugees originally. We're talking 40 years ago, 50 years ago from the war. But, you know, I met a gentleman in Israel. He was an Arab, and his he lived in Jerusalem. And during the war, his family packed up and left to go to Jordan. This is back during, the 67 war. So his family owned a house. They left during the middle of the war, obviously to get out of harm's way, get their family out of harm's way. They go to Jordan. All right. Well, when they come back, they can't, their house no longer belongs to them. It belongs to Israel, but they want their house back. But they don't get it back, so they view that as an injustice, and they hold that against the Israelis. You see how this works? So you can't deny that they feel wronged, but at the other hand, you go, it's a war, and
you shouldn't have picked it.
And well, so the Israelis take over the land where your house was. I'm just saying, at some point, after 40, 50 years, you say, you know what, it's time to move on. A lot of Palestinians have. Sometimes it's part, we feel like an injustice was done, but it's time to move on with life. And so, anyway.
But another important ingredient to what you've just been talking about, those Palestinians were urged to leave.
Yes.
Were urged to leave by Egypt and Syria and Jordan, who were about to attack. They told the Palestinians, get out, because we're coming in, and we're going to blow.
And then lost the war.
And then they lost the war.
They thought they were going to win the war, but and so if you look back at that war, you would have to say it was divine intervention. Israel shouldn't have won that.
No, but they weren't chased out by Israel. They weren't chased out by Israel.
Right. So, you know, you have situations like that. A lot of times it's complicated, it's complex, emotions involved, bitter rivalries, hatred. Now, you could understand an Israeli-Palestinian disagreement over land, but I mentioned earlier that the hatred for the Jews around the world by people seems to be supernatural, which only confirms the Bible. And I take Iran, for example. Iran, they, you know, vowed, the mullahs there, the ayatollahs, the leaders of Iran, vowed to wipe Israel off the face of the earth. Why? Iran is Persian, not even Arab. Now, they are Muslim, but they're 1,000 miles away from Israel. There's no argument over land between Israel and Iran or Iran. Is it Iran or Iran, or is it both, Fred? Tell me from a Canadian perspective.
It depends on what school or school you went to.
Okay.
Or tomato, tomato, you know?
Okay. So I think, so you go, why does Iran care about Israel? Why do they want to wipe it off the face of the earth? It's 1,000 miles away. They have no land beef with Israel. The peoples aren't, you know, natural. They aren't rivals in any way. There isn't a history of war. there you just go, it's a mystery unless you say, well, now you could argue that it's the Muslims hating the Jews. You could say that, but that would, a lot of people don't buy that because they would say, well, you're stereotyping Muslims as hating Jews mm-hmm. just because they're Jews. But I would say Iran hating and wanting to wipe Israel off the face of the earth is akin to the U.S. wanting to wipe Chile off the face of the earth. Maybe if, what if our president said, you know what? I want to wipe Chile off the face of the earth. Who's with me? Death to Chile. I mean, this right. is almost the same thing as the Iranian Ayatollahs, again, who have no dealings with Israel, little small area, 1,000 miles from them, with that just shows you the supernatural hatred for the Jews.
That's yeah. right.
You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. By the way, did you guys see this story? There's this 8-year-old girl. Where does she live? And she's been denied entry into the Boy Scouts. Well, it's the Cub Scouts, but it's part of the Boy Scouts of America. Did you guys see this?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where is this story out of, Walker? Do you know where this story is out of, or Fred?
New Jersey.
Okay, New Jersey. So you have this 8-year-old girl. In the picture, she looks like a boy. She got her hair cut like a boy, like most boys, like a lot of boys. And she wants to be in the Cub Scouts, and they've told her, you have to be a boy. You need to go to the Girl Scouts. And I guess, is this an act of discrimination and bigotry?
Yeah, and I hope I'm not being overly pessimistic here, but look at what happened when the Boy Scouts were challenged on homosexuality. They eventually put up the white flag.
They put up a fight for a long time before put up the white flag, but they did. It was so disappointing.
They did, but it was at Gates, who became head of the Boy Scouts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bob board, Gates, yeah. former Secretary of Defense.
Yes. And so, anyway, they put up the white flag. They now welcome homosexuals. They don't have a moral ground, in my opinion, anymore to say no to a transgender. And I think that's the likelihood, the way it's going to go. Mm-hmm. They gave in eventually on the homosexual issue. They'll likely give in on this, too.
So they need to just call it the Scouts and allow it to be both male and females to be a part of it.
So you want 14-year-old boys saying I'm a girl, so they go on camping outings with 14-year-old girls?
What this will do is this will be the demise of the Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts.
If you allow it to happen. Now, this is in New Jersey. And listen to this. This is I'm reading from NewJersey.com. NewJersey.com, this story. Now, listen how this story reads.
Yeah.
I want to point this out. I was reading. It says, Christy Maldonado, Maldonado, said she was stunned because her son had been a member of the Cub Scouts, PAC 87, for about a month, and his transgender status had not been a secret, but some parents complained. Anyway, it goes on to call him both a boy and a girl mm-hmm. in the story. Kind of like you get Caitlin and Bruce.
Yeah, you can't do that.
You can't do that. No. You can't be two things at once. You're a boy or a girl, depending on your genitalia.
Right.
And this is not hard to understand. This is biology 101. But at least for now, good for the Cub Scouts for saying, listen, I'm sorry, but Cub Scouts are for boys. Girl Scouts are brownies, I guess, are for girls.
And if you don't like it, you don't have to join.
Exactly.
You're not entitled to join the Boy Scouts.
We'll see where that story goes. But thanks for joining us today, folks. We hope you have a wonderful day. Keep listening to American Family Radio.